friend. So I'm wanting to talk about one of the Brahma Viharas tonight, and that's mudita. It's interesting. The Buddha talked about the Brahma Viharas as a temporary liberation of the mind, citta vimutti, or citta vimutti, a temporary liberation of the mind. Such a support on the way to awakening, on the way to full awakening, to court the conditions of our lives and court conditions that support us in experiencing these temporary moments and experiences of freedom, that we can get a taste of what liberation actually feels like within our own heart and mind. And that experience is so onward leading, supports us in dedicating ourselves to this path of practice. Wanting to talk about mudita. The Buddha didn't say much about it in the suttas. And it's associated with dispelling discontent. And we have Dharma ancestors that do offer suggestions on how to cultivate this heart of mind, this beautiful heart quality of mudita or sympathetic joy to dispel discontent. And the reason I'm so interested in mudita and actually all of the Brahma Viharas is just the spirit of the times that we're living through, the zeitgeist that we find ourselves in. I'm planning a retreat with a dear friend in for some time next year. We are talking about what it is that we would like to teach together. And inevitably, we started talking about the times that we're living in. And what came to mind for me was the opening, that opening paragraph of The Tale of Two Cities. Was the best. It was the best of times. It was the worst of time. It was the age of wisdom. The age of foolishness, the epoch of belief and the epoch of incredulity, the season of light, the season of darkness. It was the winter of, or it was the spring of hope and the winter of despair. These opposites coexisting with each other, and that to me is what our times feel like. When I allow my mind, when I turn my heart to the zeitgeist, words that come to mind are, and they're all words that we're familiar with, divisiveness, dishonesty in our public shared spaces, in our public discourse, frenetic, energetic, but almost a wild, uncontrollable energy. Despondency, especially when the mind contacts the realities of war and the climate crisis and all the isms, can be a real sense of despondency. And there is so much beauty afoot, so much beauty, filling our time. The fact that we're coming together, gathering around the Dhamma, these beautiful teachings, and that we're supporting each other and embodying and living into these teachings. It's a beautiful, wholesome sign of our times, and not just people turning to Buddhism, but various wisdom traditions for guidance. I'm thinking of Hannah Ritchie, data scientist out at Oxford, who's written a book, Not the End of the World. And she posits that we could be the first sustainable generation and that we can actually turn things around. And she brings in pretty cogent data to support this Different, very different perspective that we're all being, that we've been acclimating ourselves to very, very slowly, heartbreaking. I'm thinking of Rebecca Henderson and her book, Reimagining Capitalism. She's an economist out of Harvard. And she's naming businesses, small businesses, large businesses, the students that she works with, businesses, namely, that are purpose-driven and that are seeing that making a profit and ethics and social responsibility can actually coexist. That you don't have to subordinate the welfare of the planet or your neighborhood or ethics to make money. And these are some of the, I think, beautiful things and opportunities that are just running through our time. It's so interesting. The spirit of our times would have us believe that we can't live with a mutual respect for each other because of our differences. But our differences are just tiny variations on shared, poignant themes of being human. We have these very sensitive, open nervous systems and hearts that are susceptible to injury and vulnerability. They're also quite resilient. These hearts and bodies and minds that know dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, difficulty, pain, challenges. We have these heart minds and these bodies that are capable of so much harm, but also incredible kindness and generosity. Immense gratitude. And it's been important for me to not to be deluded about the times that we're living in and really allow my heart to have an honest, direct encounter with the challenges, with the difficulties, but from a place that's resourced, a place that is balanced, that's made resilient and strong through tending to or living into, through living into these teachings, these practices of the Buddha. That it's possible to meet the challenges of our time from a place of, as I said, non-reactivity, balance, wisdom, so that there can be a nuanced response for our time, so that there can be a creative response, so that there can be compassionate action, anukampa. I was so heartened to find out that the Buddha had a word for this in Pali, anukampa, compassionate action, that that was needed in the times of the Buddha, and it is definitely needed now. So I've been turning to the Brahma Viharas to bring some wellness into the heart, mind, and body. Because I've been really feeling into our collective reactivity. And although I empathize and I understand why that is, I'm not wanting to contribute to the belligerence, the dividedness, the wariness. So really turning to the Brahma Viharas, and tonight really wanting to turn to mudita, this heart quality of dispelling discontent and really being content with the goodness or good fortune of our lives and the blessings of our lives. It's a really lovely teacher, Some of you probably practiced with her, Caroline Jones. She's the resident teacher at the Forest Refuge. And she has created a chant for each of the Brahma Viharas. And I was sitting with her in November of last year. And she shared this beautiful mudita chant. So beautiful. It goes, savor every living moment, finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment, finding goodness everywhere. Savor every living moment, finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment, finding goodness everywhere. Really simple. She said she created it while she was cycling through Cambridge, which is favorite place on the planet, one of her favorite places on the planet. And you can hear it in the chant that she was on her bike, cycling, taking in the beauty of Cambridge. Savor every living moment, finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment, finding goodness everywhere. I really love chanting. I love chanting as a way of summoning and calling forth the different teachings that are and are held in the chants, embedded in the chant. Because when we chant, our hearts and our bodies and our bones and our muscles, our bodies resonate with the meaning that the chant carries. And these chants, not this particular chant, but Vijanti Satimanto Namike. These chants have a meaning, and they were so meaningful that people wanted to preserve them. They wanted to preserve the teachings that were embedded in this teaching so that they could be passed on and practiced with. So when we chant, we experience the teaching in an embodied way. It allows us to connect with the spirit of the chant, not just here, it starts to move down into the heart, down into the body, down into the viscera. And it's a way of summoning these qualities of, say, metta, the loving kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy, or upekkha, equanimity. Calling these qualities forth through not only practicing with them in our daily lives, but through chanting them. It mudita translated into English as sympathetic joy or altruistic joy or resonant joy. I love resonant joy as a translation. And what's common to all of them is this word joy. Okay. Mudita is the wholesome heart mind state of joy that recognizes and resonates with the beauty goodness and success of our own lives, the lives of other people, the conditions that we find ourselves in. I just invite you to, well, chant a little more. And you are not obliged to chant. You're not obliged. You have choice in practice. Things that are offered, you can see if, does my heart resonate with this? Is this the right medicine for my heart mind in this moment? No, I'm just going to listen. That's fine. You have choice. So important to remember that we have choice and agency in practice, the agency of intention. We can't always control what's happening in the mind. A lot of the time, can't control the conditions that we find ourselves in, that we're practicing in, but we can bring intention. And through intention, there's some influence. And remembering that we have this kind of agency. So you have agency. You don't need to participate in this chant or chanting. Yeah. As we chant, if you decide to, feel free to allow sati, mindfulness, to resonate with and know any beauty, goodness that just naturally emerges as we call on mudita through chanting. It might be the goodness of the body just starting to organically rock from side to side or forward and back. It might be just the feeling, the soothing quality of hand on the heart, hands on the belly. It might just be taking in the melody, the changing melody, and how that can be a gateway into this practice of impermanence that the Buddha is constantly asking us to attune to and know. Allow your heart to take in that which is soothing. The real support for the mind in calming and settling. Savor every living moment. Finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment. Finding goodness everywhere. Savor every living moment. Finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment, finding goodness everywhere. Savor every living moment, finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment, finding goodness everywhere. Savor every living moment, finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment, finding goodness everywhere. So, one of our Dharma ancestors, Buddhaghosa, who gathered and composed and added his own insights into what's called the Visuddhimagga, the path of purification, the whole section dedicated to the cultivation of the Brahmaviharas, one of which is mudita, sympathetic joy, compassion, or sympathetic joy, resonant joy, altruistic joy. And he wanted us to keep some things in mind as we develop this practice. That when we're cultivating heart quality of sympathetic joy, resonant joy, it's not any kind of joy, right? It's not the temporary hit of pleasure that comes with some pleasant sensory experience. And the Buddha really wants us to gain some skill in being with pleasant sensory experience so that we can know it clearly, sampajanya, clear comprehension, without being sucked into clinging and attachment. And we recognize their impermanent nature, their not self nature, their dukkha nature, their unsatisfactoriness. So with mudita, we're not cultivating pleasure that comes from the pleasant experiences that come through the sense gate, like a warm shower or a nice piece of chocolate. This said, mudita is translated as sympathetic joy, resonant joy, altruistic joy. And it's the heart of metta, the heart of friendliness, the heart of benevolence, that when that heart comes in contact with the goodness, happiness, success, good fortune of another being, it takes up that happiness itself and resonates with it. That happiness becomes our own. Was with my goddaughter just this past fall. No, it was earlier this year, so it was like January. And she had just come back from her first semester of college. And she was just so excited and thrilled and thriving, and you could feel her happiness and her growing confidence, her and her excitement about what she was learning. And in that moment, her happiness became my happiness. My heart just met her current condition and was celebrating her growing confidence, her happiness. So this is mudita, resonating with the happiness of another. And we've all had these experiences. Not a being who hasn't had this experience on the planet of seeing something, something that's beautiful, something that's wholesome and skillful. And the heart mind just stands up in recognition and celebrates it, recognizes it, and allows that happiness to become its own happiness. The moment, like a young toddler pulls themselves up on a table or a couch and starts to toddle for the first time, it's like, oh, the experience of mudita. We've all had this. And it's not just for other humans, we can have this experience. It's just seeing the beauty of the natural world, celebrating. And I know our planet is in distress. It's true. And there are moments and places on the planet that have health that are not in distress. I wasn't raised here in New England on the East Coast. I'm used to, I was raised on the West Coast in California. I'm used to spring. You really start to smell spring in March, definitely by April. Beautiful, especially the Bay Area, rolling green hills and vast blue skies. In the summers, the golden hills, right? It's beautiful colors. Hey, here on the East Coast, spring comes a little later. That snowstorm in early April was quite a shock flying from very sunny spring-like California and coming here to, whoa, ice and snow. But I've noticed people here as that ice and snow has melted and spring is coming, people just radiating with the happiness of the land and noticing their crocus is coming and the birds coming out earlier in the mornings because the sun is rising earlier. Right? So we can feel this resonant joy, not just with other beings, other humans, but land, place. I'm going to skip this part. The mudita celebrating, allowing our hearts to resonate with wholesome joy. And this is really important because sometimes when we're practicing mudita, the question comes like, well, are we celebrating all types of happiness that roll through a human heart? What about the people who derive a sense of happiness from causing harm or pain to others? And that is not what we're celebrating. We're not celebrating that kind of unskillful, that's Schadenfreude, all right? Deriving pleasure from someone else's failure. And that's the exact opposite of mudita. We are not celebrating that. In fact, when the heart comes in contact with a being who is caught up in that afflictive mind state of Schadenfreude or some other afflictive mind state, which results in them deriving happiness from someone else's misfortune. We recognize the conditions again, sampajanya. We start to use our imagination, especially if we don't know the person all that well, in an ethical way to start to imagine, okay, what were the conditions that may have led to this? There's some pain in this person's life, right? And they don't know how to relieve that pain in healthy, wholesome ways. So they end up running that pain through the nervous systems of other people. Right? And when the heart of metta, of benevolence and care, meets that kind of pain and delusion and misunderstanding, compassion around. I saw myself experiencing this. I'd read Richard III, I don't know how many times, I was familiar with the play, but as I was reading that opening monologue or soliloquy and hearing why he was plotting for the downfall of his brother, and he named how he was stamped by nature with this deformity. And that even dogs, when they walked by him, would bark. And he wants to experience, he said, love, majesty. But has been banished from that simply because of the way that he looks. The heart of compassion or the heart of metta, when it meets that, compassion arises. and understanding that leads to, oh, how can I help? How can I soothe? But with mudita, we're not celebrating that kind of unwholesome, unskillful happiness, the faux happiness. They're not truly happy, actually. Actually, a testament to the immense amount of pain running through that person's nervous system.
Right.
So we're not delighting in deluded happiness arising from harm. We're actually celebrating happiness that leads to wisdom.
Right.
Or we're celebrating a wholesome form of good fortune, success, beauty. And that celebration leads to freedom, leads to awakening. Chaito Vimutti, temporary liberation of the mind. So our Dharma ancestor Buddhaghosa also wants us to know about what he calls the far and near enemies of mudita. I like to think of them as just near misses and far misses of mudita. And he wants us to know this so that we'll recognize when the heart is moving out of the terrain of mudita into something that's unskillful. So a near miss of mudita is exuberance. This is something that I experience a lot. exuberance. And I was thinking, like, what happens for me when I'm kind of taken over by exuberance? And especially when I'm cultivating mudita, and it's, I lose touch with the good fortune of the other person. And I'm just kind of high off of the happiness. And I start to feel like I'm this unmoored kite that's just flying about on the winds of happiness. So there's a clinging to the mind state itself. Yeah, I'm not, there's even a loss of mindfulness. It's just kind of drunk in the pleasant feeling tone of the happiness. And there isn't the string of the kite grounded back into that person's goodness, their good fortune. And then after some time, I come crashing down. Okay? So exuberant, near miss of mudita. And then there's the far miss, and we've explored one, Schadenfreude. But the other is envy, right? Our hearts meet the success of another human being and it just shrinks in envy. And when this happens for me, sometimes I just like feel like I'm having this like little conference with my heart. I'm like, please, please, please don't feel this way. Don't feel this way. But in reality, the heart's like, they get all of that? Really? They get the beautiful house and the supportive spouse and the beautiful children and the meaningful work. They get all of it? And the heart, it happens for our heart sometimes. Okay? We hear good news from a dear one or a friend and like, yeah, that's really great. I'm really happy for you. Be real, it happens. And I think one of the reasons the heart starts to shrink in envy because we have these constellation of beliefs that make us think that there's a shortage of happiness. There's only so much happiness to go around. Happiness as a commodity and it's limited. So I gotta elbow my way and get mine. Kind of scarcity that can give rise to a sense of inner lack and competition. And in those moments, our hearts are living in rooms of scarcity. We don't need to. We believe that someone else's success, someone else's good fortune is a testament to our own shortcomings or our own unfulfilled belongings, our perception of our own shortcomings, right? But the happiness and well-being that comes from mudita and all the other three Brahmaviharas is an internal wellspring that's infinite. And I'm not exaggerating. There's a reason why the Brahmaviharas, these heavenly abodes, are the divine resting place for our heart. There's a reason why they're characterized in the suttas as immeasurable, abundant. They are limitless when we tap into them, especially mudita. When we think about mudita and coming to appreciate the good fortune and blessings of our own lives and the blessings of others, especially of others, it increases our own experiences of happiness. I know some of you have probably heard this quote from Sharon Salzberg, where she's paraphrasing something the Dalai Lama said, but it's worth sharing because it's a really good reminder, and it speaks directly to the limitless quality of mudita. She says, as the Dalai Lama puts it, there are so many people in the world, it simply makes sense to make their happiness a source of our own. Then our chances of experiencing joy are enhanced 6 billion to 1. Those are really good odds. And now it's 8 billion, right? We really have an opportunity to. Tap into the wellspring of mudita. So, our ancestors at the Visuddhimagga suggest that we cultivate mudita by bringing in the happy being. So, with metta, we have various categories of beings that we cultivate metta with. And we have the category of being that we cultivate compassion with, that's the suffering being. And with mudita, we call into our heart the happy being. And again, it doesn't need to be a human being. There's this beautiful pup in my life by the name of Joy. Yes, her name is Joy. She's a little white dog. With her big brown eyes and her brown or her black nose, wet nose. And she is just the epitome of joy. And when I connect with her and the how happy she is to see everyone and how she does this little, how she waggles her behind, it brings me so much joy, so much happiness. So you bring in the happy being, one way of cultivating mudita, and you bring in these phrases. May your good fortune continue. May it increase, and may it never wane. May your good fortune continue. May it increase, and may it never wane. And I always thought this last part of the phrase was really curious. May it never wane. But I was like, actually, all conditions wane. So why are we wishing? Why are we wishing that? And the Visuddhimagga doesn't explain why this particular phrase, may your good fortune continue, may it increase, and may it never wane. For me, when I really can sincerely mean that, there isn't an ounce of envy in the heart. I'm wholeheartedly celebrating that person or being like Joy, that their good fortune never ever wane. I'm just so on the side of life and the wholesome and the beautiful and the shining. So that particular part of the phrase for me is a counter to the envy. So in an ancient text in the Anguttara Nikaya, I think it's the 11th or the 12th, I'm not sure. The Buddha suggests that he's naming all of the conditions that lead to full awakening. And one of them is a mind that's gathered and concentrated, this mind of samadhi. And that when we gather the heart mind, the energies of the heart mind, concentration arises out of a happy mind, a happy mind, from an application of energy to practice, a steady application of energy to practice. And the spirit with which that is done, it's done in a friendly way, it's done in a restful, receptive way, and it's done with utter patience, utter patience. I remember this past period of practice, a long practice. And it occurred to me that if I just let go of all of the aspects of my life, sincerely gave myself over to just humbly being with one in-breath, one out-breath, that the mind of its own volition would just settle. Just by virtue of being in those conditions, of not agitating the mind and bringing in this utter patience. And when I remember reading this sutta, and it was such a revelation for me. Because I thought concentration, samadhi, came from precision is true. Yes, we do want to have some precision in our practice. But I'd say that I felt like a rigid, judgmental kind of whipping myself into samadhi was what was going to help my mind to gather and collect. He says it's a happy mind. This is from the Buddha. For one who is happy, there is no need for an act of will. May my mind be concentrated. It is natural for one who is happy that their mind will be concentrated. I'll read that again. For one who is happy, there is no need for an act of will. May my mind be concentrated. It is natural for one who is happy that their mind will be concentrated. Do you hear that? Not striving. Not berating ourselves into samadhi, not forcing the mind to gather and collect and concentrate, but happiness. Happiness born of a contented heart mind and a contentment and a rest and an ease in the body. Okay? A happiness born of contentment, tranquility, kindness, patience. Just, again, being so content with the humble experience of offering ourselves one metta phrase at a time, or offering another being one metta phrase, or offering the mudita phrases, or just being with the simple experiences of the breath, or being with the simple experiences of just noticing the changing phenomena that's rising at each of the sense gates, whether that's a sight or a sound or a smell, a taste or sensation of the body or mind state, right? Very simple. Very, very simple. And practicing mudita can be a support for the development of happiness, the happiness that can lead to samadhi, lead to concentration. And this is where it can be helpful to start a sit. Sometimes we dive right into a sit, just right there on the breath, without giving the mind a context within which it's practicing in. What's the spirit that we're wanting to bring to being mindful of the breath, being mindful of the body? What's the atmosphere in the heart mind like? Is there patience? Is there kindness? Okay. Is there a Oh, wish to be of benefit for all being, and that we practice for all being. So you can start your sit by tending to this context within which practice occurs, attending to the inner atmosphere within which our practice unfolds. But as we are chanting, attuning to ease, rest, interest, allowing ourselves to take in that which is beautiful, allowing ourselves to take in any signs and cues of safety, that when we take in those cues of safety, it lands in the nervous system and we actually feel safe. Yeah, I would say that a sense of safeness and happiness is essential for the gathering and collecting of the mind. Because samadhi is predicated on letting go of our preoccupations. And in order to let go, there needs to be trust in the nervous system, trust in the body. So actually orienting, noticing cues of safety, noticing that which is beautiful, taking in our good fortune, allowing that to soothe and calm the nervous system. Brighten and gladden the heart mind is a condition, a support for gathering and collecting, developing samadhi, which is an integral part of the gradual path of awakening. So the Visuddhimagga suggests that we don't cultivate mudita for ourselves. Almost said samadhi for ourselves. I was like, no, the Visuddhimagga does not say that. It does say that we cultivate mudita, that we don't cultivate mudita for ourselves. And when you think of the phrase, I can see why that's the case. May my happiness continue. May my good fortune continue. May it increase and may it never wane. You could see how the mind could easily move into craving and clinging my happiness, right? But when we turn to the sutta and we practice with mudita as a radiating practice, so without the phrases and the categories of being, we are told and instructed, we're actually instructed to cultivate mudita for ourselves, actually all the Brahma Viharas for ourselves. That we allow the quality of mudita to shine forth in its various directions. Like, I will abide, pervading one quarter with a heart mind filled with mudita. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself, and to all as to myself. So it's actually okay for us to cultivate mudita for ourselves. And when we do, there isn't this clinging. It has a flavor of gratitude, connecting with our good fortune, and the appreciation that arises from contact with that good fortune. And we can actually shift the phrases to lessen the clinging and to actually have the focus be gratitude, be the appreciation. So instead of may my good fortune increase, may it continue, or may my good fortune continue, may it increase and may it never wane. Instead of that phrase, it could be simply, I appreciate the blessings of my life, or I appreciate my good fortune. There's one mudita phrase that I learned from Jill Shepherd, and I love it. And the phrase goes, made. So when we have contact with someone else's good fortune and happiness arises, or we connect with our own good fortune and gratitude arises, the phrase centers around the gratitude. May this gratitude continue. May it grow. And may it lead to ever deepening ease and freedom. Isn't that beautiful? So the emphasis isn't on our good fortune. May my good fortune continue, may it increase, may it never wane. The focus becomes the gratitude and it being an onward leading condition, a stepping stone towards the heart mind moving toward awakening. Like, may this mind state of gratitude, may it continue. May it grow, may it increase, and may it lead to ever deepening ease and freedom, i.e., contentment that supports the heart in awakening. Love this particular approach and twist on the phrase. There's a phrase in a chant. Called the chant is called the sharing of blessings. It says, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. I was actually with a yogi during I just taught the 1 month retreat at Spirit Rock. And there was a yogi, they were chanting this every night. So the yogis were forming a relationship with these chants. And there was one yogi, you could just feel her sincerity around wanting to share the blessings of her life. May all beings receive the blessings of my life, all beings, no exception. So the blessings of our lives, as I was with her, it was reminding me of like, oh, the blessings of our lives aren't to be hoarded. They're meant to be shared. We're asked to give of them generously, allow our gifts to move through us and out through us into the world. Right? But how can we do that if we don't know what our gifts are, if we don't know what our good fortune is? And this is another reason why it makes sense to cultivate mudita for ourselves so that we can know our good fortune and our gifts and share them freely. Person who comes to mind is Allie Halpert. I don't know if some of you know her. She lives here in Massachusetts. Queer Jewish singer, songwriter. She has this song that I learned from one of my teachers. It was loose and loose and baby, you don't have to carry the weight of the world in your muscles and bones. Let go, let go, let go. Loose and loose and baby, you don't have to carry the weight of the world in your muscles and bones. Let go, let go, let go. And this song has been such good medicine for me, especially when I connect with our times and the heart is so open and the pain can just come in. Like, ah, oh, loose. You don't have to be responsible for everybody. Let that go. I love it. And if Allie Halpert hadn't recognized that she has the gift of being a creator and carrier of song, she wouldn't have created that song. She wouldn't have shared it. Somehow it got to one of my teachers, not in the Buddhist tradition, but in the therapeutic world. Linda Tai, she's a therapist who specializes in trauma resolution and grief. She was moved by the song, brought it into the community because she thought, you know, this would be good medicine for my community. it lands in my heart, has so much meaning for me. Carry it around, practice with it all the time. I was just chanting it last night as I was noticing the pattern to take care of all kinds of people. I was like, oh, loosen, loosen, baby. You don't have to carry the weight of the world in your muscles and bones. Let go, let go, let go. It's a practice instruction that has meant a lot to me, right? And then I'm moved. I share it with you. Perhaps it touches something in you, and then you end up sharing it with your friends, your community. So here's the song, all of its wisdom. Here's this chant moving through various communities because someone recognized their gifts and they shared it freely. But that's not possible when we don't recognize our gifts. And mudita helps us to stay connected and in touch with the gifts of our lives, our good fortune. And it's not to be hoarded, but shared. And in the sharing, we bless each other. I mean, if the Buddha had decided to be a Pacheka Buddha, so someone who's fully awakened but chooses not to teach, we wouldn't be here together right now. In this particular configuration, reflecting on mudita, having our questions about it, thinking about how we could practice with it. There's so much to share about mudita. I'm really wanting to go back to the chant, explore how in this chant, and this is what I love about Caroline Jones, there's a wisdom aspect. Savor every living moment, finding beauty everywhere. Savor every dying moment, finding goodness everywhere. How in the chant it's acknowledging this fluid, influx, water-like universe that we live in, impermanence, which can be so challenging for our hearts and our minds. So challenging for the ego. But that when we have all four Brahma Viharas firing in the heart, allowing this impermanence to move through us and being aware of it, that we can attune to the beauty of beginnings, middles, and endings. But we don't have time to talk about all that. I wanted to unpack that more. Also wanting to unpack how mudita and metta pair together can be a real inoculation, protection against all of the messages that we get from the larger culture about our bodies, messages about work, work ethic, messages about caretaking, all of the isms, ableism, ageism, anti-Semitism, racism, homophobia, transphobia, all these messages, adverse messages that we got about being in feminine bodies and male bodies and Black bodies and brown bodies and white bodies, all of the negative messages that we can get from the culture, and how metta and mudita can be a protection from internalizing those messages and the internalized devaluation that occurs. Right? Kenneth Harding, who's a psychologist, writes really beautifully and painfully and very specifically to internalized devaluation. I was wanting to explore that. But Okay, friend. We have gone over, and I just appreciate us coming together, practicing together. We can dedicate the merit and all the goodness that's come from us just practicing and meditating together, reflecting on the Dhamma, our questions. May it be of benefit and a support for our own awakening. And the benefits that we receive from coming together, may it ripple out and through our words and our actions and bless everyone that we come in contact with in the days and weeks and months to come. May all beings be safe and protected. May they be happy, peaceful, and may they know the goodness of a free heart, no greed, aversion, and delusion. And what's left when those things abate are these four Brahma Viharas of joy and compassion and equanimity and utter kindness. May all beings know this. Thank you so much, dear friend. Thank you. Take really good care. Good night, good night, good night. Bye, dear ones. Bye.